This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
It is Tuesday, March 11th, 2008. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman, en route, or may have already landed in Darfur. And he's going to be calling into, he's going to be doing his program from Darfur, I believe, on Friday. Is that right, Lauren?
I believe so, yes.
I got Lauren here. Ciro is with me. The Sammy Cam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. Of course, we're streaming live at airamerica.com. The big story, Elliot Spitzer caught up in some type of, well, I mean, it's unclear exactly what he's caught up in, frankly, folks. And it's being reported that, of course, he had a relationship with a prostitute. It's unclear what he's going to do, whether or not he's going to resign or not. Am I the only one who smells something really, really fishy here?
I don't think you're the only one.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of people put two and two together. Now, I'm not saying that in any way Spitzer's actions are, well, I mean, look, we don't know what he's guilty of, what he did or did not do. He's apologized for something with his to his family and to the people of New York State. But even if we stipulate for a moment that he did have this relationship with a prostitute, the details of the investigation are extremely murky and very, very dubious. Very strange to see the feds involved in this. Very strange to see something like this having to be run through the Department of Justice. Particularly when it starts with supposedly a bribery case, but there's no money coming into his accounts. It's only money that he's taking out. Now, Lauren, help me out here.
I'll try.
How does a bribe work? Let's say you wanted to bribe me, let's say, to, I don't know, to promote your posts on 236.com.
Okay.
Now, would I take money out of my bank account to give to you if you were going to bribe me?
No, I think that if I were going to bribe you, I would have to give you money, and then you would give me something in exchange for that money.
Okay, see, that's the part that really sounds a little bit fishy here, because supposedly they started this investigation because they suspected he may be receiving bribes. So if he was receiving bribes, i.e. he'd have to be receiving money. But it doesn't appear that he was receiving any money. It appears that he was paying money out.
Right. There was money going from his account into some shell companies that looked like maybe consulting firms.
Right. That turned out to be consultations that were a little bit more private and personal,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently, this whole thing started with a and somewhere else has been suggested that maybe he was being blackmailed. Okay, the idea being that well, he's taking money out now. There are statutes, and you may find this a little bit scary, Lauren. Maybe not so much for you. You tend not to take out $9,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 at a time out of your bank account, right?
Well,
I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous.
Maybe
but
on the weekends.
On the weekends, right. Well, if you take out $10,000, apparently this sets off an automatic trigger where the bank notifies the IRS. You're taking out $10,000 in cash. If you have a series of withdrawals that are just under $10,000, this begins to also set off an alarm. Because it then looks like you're trying to avoid setting off the alarm if you take out $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for instance, Rush Limbaugh, when he had his little problem with medication, and he was buying so much medication, I think they call it hillbilly heroin, when he was buying all this hillbilly heroin, what he would do is he would take out $9,900 repeatedly because he didn't want to set off this trigger. Now, that's something I think often they, and these cases are called structuring, I guess. And often that element of the case is determined after the fact when they find out where these monies go. So it may have set off some type of trigger saying, okay, he's taken out a lot of money. He's trying to avoid the limits that would automatically notify the IRS. Maybe he's being bribed. I mean, excuse me, maybe he's being blackmailed for something. And then somehow, out of nowhere, now I'm following the latest New York Times piece here. We're not going to spend way too much time on this today, but Scott Horton's going to be joining us from Harper's Magazine, and he's going to talk about it. Scott Harper, of course, is really probably the most knowledgeable about the DOJ, and we have been talking about this corruption of the Department of Justice now for several years. And it started with the firing of those U.S. attorneys who apparently wouldn't play ball with the Department of Justice and the White House, which involved prosecuting Democrats at a rate 5.6 times higher than that of Republicans. And these U.S. attorneys were fired because they weren't playing ball. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is the Don Siegelman case, former governor of Alabama, who was prosecuted multiple times. They finally got a conviction for essentially what is a non-crime. And we all know the story. The story was recently played on 60 Minutes and then just bizarrely blacked out in northern Alabama by a television station that has connections with the Alabama Republican Party. So Scott Harper will be digging into this with us a little bit later. And, you know, if people want to talk at 866-303-2270 about the hypocrisy, and clearly if he engaged in this these activities, incredibly hypocritical. But this is essentially, in my opinion, a victimless crime. I don't even know if this type of stuff should be a crime, but it is. And this guy should not be breaking the law. Now, you could also argue that, look, David Vitter, senator from Louisiana, he's on record of having employed the services of a prostitute. You look at Larry Craig. He also found guilty of a misdemeanor trying to solicit sex in a men's bathroom. They haven't resigned. I think his resignation, in my opinion, is simply a political issue. But then there's this other issue which should be problematic for all Americans. Do we have a Department of Justice that is using a tremendous amount of resources going after Democratic politicians simply to gain some type of partisan advantage? Now, we can dig into the fact. Some people say, is this tit for tat? John McCain reported that he has this tryst. And you want to talk about prostitution. John McCain, maybe he had a relationship with this female lobbyist. Well, he had a relationship, you know, and to me, it's irrelevant whether or not it was sexual or not. It may keep me up at nights to actually contemplate John McCain having a sexual relationship with anybody, let alone someone who's not his wife. But the fact of the matter is, what ended up happening in those exchanges was that it was impacting his role as a legislature. I mean, he was pressuring the FCC to give favors to a client of this female lobbyist who he was or was not having a sexual relationship with. He obviously was friends with her. She showed up everywhere. It's not beyond John McCain to have good, solid friendships with lobbyists. Half of his campaign staff seems to be lobbyists. But the issue here is, how did we get from A to Z on this case? It's incredibly suspicious. If we're to believe this latest report in the New York Times, it started with the IRS saying, hey, maybe Governor Spitzer is either receiving bribes or getting blackmailed. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this is out of the blue. I'm going to read this graph from the New York Times. Before long, the investigators learned that the money was being moved to pay for sex and that the transactions were being manipulated to conceal Mr. Spitzer's connection to payments for meetings with prostitutes. Then, with the assistance of a confidential informant, a young woman who had worked previously as a prostitute for the Emperor's Club VIP, this apparently is the prostitution service, the investigators were able to get a judge to approve wiretaps on the cell phones of some of those suspected in the involvement of the escort service. Where did this, out of the blue, this young informant come? I mean, if you've worked at a prostitution service, you just out of the blue say, you know what, time for me to call the FBI. Let them know, just randomly, I used to work for this service. I have no idea that Elliot Spitzer's involved in this. I have no idea, in fact, why the feds would be involved in a prostitution ring. Most prostitution busts are done on a state level. This is one very, very intelligent, almost clairvoyant informant. I mean, do people who engage in this type of activity wake up one day and say, you know what? I'm looking back at my life. I was a prostitute. I'm going to call the FBI today. Just say, hey, look, I want you to know, no particular reason, I was involved in this service. If you need me to testify so you can get a warrant to tap Elliot Spitzer, I'm here. 17 after, Cedar in for Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. It is primary day in Mississippi. Barack Obama expected to win. The question is by how much? Clinton has been campaigning in Mississippi last week, and former President Bill Clinton has been stumping through the state over the weekend. So Obama looking to add to his delegate total. Of course, he is in the lead at this point. Last week, which was supposedly a bad week for Obama, basically ended out, if you include the three superdelegates who flipped, and Bill Foster, who was elected in Illinois, who is a superdelegate, going to give Obama his vote. Obama campaigned for him. The entire week last week, it was 193 to 193 in terms of delegates. So Obama lost no ground last week. But let's go to the phones. Line 6, Helen in Manhattan. Welcome to the program, Helen.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Sam. I love you.
Oh, well, thank you, Helen. That's very nice.
Sam, I wish that there was an alternative like you on any of the talk shows, you know, on MSNBC or CNN, that could talk about Elliot in a sane way. My cousin was his assistant for about 15 years. She's a legal aid attorney. He's such a good guy. I mean, they're having a field day with him. They're just grinding him up, and
Well, you know, Helen, I mean, here's the bottom line. I mean, you know, what he did, if he's guilty of it, is hypocritical. He obviously has some type of problem, because I don't know what he's thinking that he could get away with this, particularly in this day and age. Maybe he needs to be listening to Air America a little bit more and reading a little more Scott Horton. But if he doesn't realize it this certainly realizes it today. But if he didn't realize a week ago that the Department of Justice has been gunning for people like him, I feel bad for the guy. To my mind, it doesn't impact necessarily what he could have done for the state. It could impact what he could do in the future.
Yeah, exactly. But they're all comparing him with Larry Craig and a couple of other people. And, I mean, they haven't done what Elliot Spitzer has done. you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
Talking about that.
Well, Elliot Spitzer's, public life and what he did as attorney general and what he could have done as governor, I think, is, you know, compared to what Larry Craig does, I can imagine it dwarfs it. But the bottom line is we're talking the context of somebody who is basically involved in a misdemeanor. In Spitzer's case, could be a felony, depending on what the details of this case end up being. But the bottom line is Larry Craig is still in office. You know, maybe he's a political liability. Maybe he's not. David Vitter is still in office. Maybe he's a political liability. Maybe he's not.
Well, they're sort of tucked away. You know, they're not in the limelight that Elliot's in. I mean,
part of it is Spitzer has been a guy who has in the past prosecuted prostitution rings. He signed a bill in the past that made it increase the penalties for soliciting a prostitute. So, he's open up to this hypocrisy.
I didn't realize that. But, I had not realized that.
Well, I mean, Helen, believe me, it breaks my heart, and I appreciate the phone call. But the bottom line here, folks, is once we get past the issue of what Spitzer did or did not do, the real question is, what's going on at the Department of Justice? Is this how we want our tax dollars spent? And is this really the function of the chief law enforcement agency of the entire United States of America? Do they use the legal system as some way of gaining political strength? Is this some type of payback for the revelations about John McCain? Is this just part of a concerted effort that we have seen, whether it's Don Siegelman, whether it's supporters of John Edwards and Hillary Clinton, whether it's voter ID laws, whether it's voter suppression? I'm starting to smell it's the latter. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to John Gorenfeld. He's written a great book about the Reverend Sun Young Moon and his empire that he's created in Washington. And then we'll take more of your calls. We'll be right back. Cedar in for Hartman, 27 after.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom, I believe, is now in Darfur, and he will be doing a show live from there on Friday. Number is 866-303-2270. We'll get to your calls in the next segment. With us on the phone right now, John Gorenfeld is a journalist who first broke the story in 2004 on Salon.com about the use of Senate offices, yes, folks, for a coronation ceremony in which the Reverend Sun Young Moon was crowned King of America. His new book, this is not a joke. Well, it's funny, but it's not a joke. Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom, is out now. He's here to tell us about it. Welcome to the program, John.
Hey, thank you. Good to be back.
John, it's great to talk to you again. We spoke, I think, back around the time where the Reverend Sun Young Moon was crowned King of America.
Yes, we did.
Now, this may come as a surprise to some people we actually have a monarchy in this country, and B, that George Bush allowed someone else to be coronated king. Just tell me a little bit of the background of that story before we get into let's start with who is Reverend Sun Young Moon and then how he became the coronated King of America.
Well, Reverend Moon, for people who are too young to remember this, he was widely considered in the 1970s. You had these people like Jim Jones, you had Charles Manson, you had L. Ron Hubbard, and Sun Young Moon was considered this dangerous madman who had come to the United States from South Korea and recruited thousands of teenagers and college students into this cult called the Moonies, where they would sell flowers for him on street corners and marry people that he chose for them at these mass weddings, where he would make these outrageous speeches about things like "many people will die," "those who go against our movement," things that you would expect to hear in a James Bond movie, but not real life. And what a lot of people don't know is that he owns the Washington Times, the preeminent national conservative newspaper.
And I mean, I remember back in the day he had one of those huge weddings at Madison Square Garden. I mean, thousands of people that he determines will marry each other, I guess.
Just at whim, just to show his total domination over people's lives.
Now, how is it that this guy was crowned King of America in a Senate office, and who was there and why?
Lots and lots and lots of money is the answer. He's put more than $2 billion into the Washington Times, which is sort of this giant gift of his to the right, to the religious right and the conservatives. The people who were there included a number of congressmen, including a guy who brought him these robes, sort of like King George III's, and a liberal congressman, too, who brought a glittering crown to his wife. And it was put on, however, by Senator John Warner, a Republican, and a religious right lobbyist named Gary Jarman, who's connected to a whole world of elder fraud. It's really this sleazy underbelly of the religious right that hardly anybody knows about, although it's right out there for anybody who wants to discover it.
This is really almost beyond belief. The idea that congressman would be bringing, it's not like, well, we showed up and then he all of a sudden said, I'm going to be King of America. And we all just look at each other and go, wow, what's this guy? They brought him the crown. They brought him the robe.
It's almost as if you named Rupert Murdoch the emperor of the universe at a Capitol Hill ceremony. It's just an outrageous thing that the conservatives have gotten away with for decades. That this guy who purports to be the second coming, in fact, he goes beyond that and makes these speeches about how Jesus Christ was a failure. He's even launched a tour of inner city churches demanding that people tear down the cross and worship him as the Messiah instead. And it's just shocking and hilarious that all of these really moralistic religious right politicians, and as well as people like the late Jerry Falwell over the years, have taken millions and millions and millions of dollars from this guy and billions for the Washington Times. And so
now you may have answered my question already, but I was going to ask you, and without, you know, I'm no theologian, but it seems to me that a guy who says Jesus was a failure and asks for people to tear down their crosses would probably not be a favorite of the Christian right in this country.
You would think so, but it's pretty much the biggest joke of the entire Republican Party, that the guy that puts out this newspaper, which is really at the core of the Republican message machine, is literally a guy right out of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind books. And in fact, Tim LaHaye was caught working with him back in the 80s. And pretty much there's this who's who of religious right people who over the years have quietly had to stroke Reverend Moon's ego in exchange for his money and treat him as a great spiritual leader, all the while he was breaking up American families across the country and causing just untold heartbreak to mothers whose kids had ended up in this cult.
So it's basically just cash. I mean, he's just buying these people outright.
Yeah, it's a massive purchase of the religious right. And
is he a big contributor to John Warner, let's say?
He doesn't provide money directly to politicians, but really to what I would call the scaffolding behind them. People like Richard Viguerie, who's considered the founding funder of the Reagan Revolution. He's sort of a major player in terms of the religious rights cash machine that has helped the conservatives stay dominant in the Republican Party. And in my research, I discovered that this guy has connections to Reverend Moon going back to the 60s. Untold amounts of cash have flowed from the Unification Church, the Reverend Moon organization, into places like the Washington Times and conservative organizations and campaign groups. Much of this money has been ripped off from widows in Japan. So this is this very seedy, not very good organization that's absolutely hilarious to me. All of the video footage I was able to find of people like Ralph Reed of the Christian Coalition going to these gala events put on by the Reverend Moon, where he announces that he's the Messiah and makes all of these bizarre speeches about the human sexual organs.
I'm sorry we don't have a clip of that. Now, let me ask you, so I'm talking to John Gorenfeld. He has written Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. So now he founded the Washington Times, is that right?
That's right. In 1982, he started it. The idea was that the Washington Post was going to be too hard on the Reagan administration. So it's a little bit like Fox News. They decided they needed their own newspaper, but nobody really wanted to buy the newspaper. So it's been this vastly money-losing operation since 1982.
How much does that lose a year? Do you know?
Oh, boy. It's something like the total is something like $2 or $3 billion since then. So I think it's something like $100 million a year. But I would have
$2 or $3 billion they lose on the Washington Times.
Well, over the period since 1982, it's been at least $2 billion. But a lot of people are starting to say $3 billion.
Wow. And he also, back in 2000, bought the UPI. Is that right?
Yeah, he bought the venerable, legendary news service. Helen Thomas actually quit rather than continue working for UPI after the Moonies bought it in 2000. He owns Insight Magazine and all of these other sort of right-wing news organizations. Insight, for people who are Media Matters fans, is where the story that Barack Obama was trained at an Islamic madrasa started. The Reverend Moon Media has been a source of all sorts of really questionable journalism that will then explode into the rest of the conservative news world, whether it's talk radio or the blogs. Things about where Saddam's WMD went. Oh, you know, you read in the Washington Times that he had WMD, but it actually went to Syria. A wide variety of bad journalism.
Wow. And so now you've reported. Now, what has happened to the UPI? I don't see it as much, I think, as I used to. Does anybody take it seriously anymore, or is it just basically one of these propaganda shops that basically makes up stories and pumps it out to people?
Yeah, UPI has pretty much become a shell of its former self, and in fact, it will. It's gone from this legendary news service that employed, like I said, Helen Thomas and the guy who wrote The Rise of the Third Reich. It's now an organization that will print plugs for Reverend Moon rallies. Every now and then they do good work, but the Reverend Moon people have pretty much gutted the operation. The Washington Times is still their central nervous system. Reverend Moon sees it as the center of his entire worldwide business empire, which is worth billions and billions of dollars. He sees the Washington Times as his way to earn prestige and to be able to go around the world and impress business partners by saying, look, I published the newspaper that's George W. Bush's favorite paper.
You know, it's interesting because I think, you know, the lesson here he's lost now $2 to $3 billion on this enterprise over the past 30 some odd years. And I think, you know, what people are beginning to understand is the value to a political operation, the amount of power that comes with owning a media outlet of that size, and particularly one on the right, that can get amplified regardless of what lies they are printing. We're talking to John Gorenfeld. He's the author of Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. Now, I'm just terribly shocked, John, to find out that Neil Bush, George Bush's brother, now, Neil Bush has a very interesting past. In addition to having this problem where apparently when he's traveling overseas, prostitutes come knocking on his door asking for sex, which is, I'm sure a problem that many people have. Just willy-nilly this happens. And also owning this this faux educational program that Barbara Bush supports by giving contributions to Hurricane Katrina victims, if it's earmarked specifically to pay for Neil Bush's so-called educational package. Neil Bush has been touring with Reverend Moon. Are they doing some type of, do they get up and sing together? What exactly do they do?
It's sort of bizarre. You know, I think that the Bush family has inherited the duty of being on Kiss Up to Reverend Moon Patrol, and this is how they keep the money going for the Washington Times, by deploying important people like George Bush Sr., who actually, according to Reuters, went to Buenos Aires with Reverend Moon in the 90s and announced this is the man with the vision and convinced local politicians to put up with him. Well, the latest thing is that Neil Bush, who is, of course, George W. Bush's corrupt younger brother, He's been photographed touring on the Reverend Moon Worldwide Roadshow for a couple of years now, and the AP just reported that he was down in Paraguay. He was photographed leaving the presidential palace down there with top Reverend Moon officials for unclear reasons, except really to build prestige for the Reverend Moon, who needs this help because all around the world, governments have banned him as a convicted American felon. And as a guy that, that governments all over the world are really concerned by his influence and his ability to buy politicians all over the place, largely in third world countries, but also in the United States. So there's this hilarious, shocking irony of this sort of Reverend Moon, the world's most horrible party guest, somebody who's banned all over the world, but he's right at home somehow in the very heart of conservative Washington. I've just been cutting together a video that's going to go up on my website, truefather.com, soon of this one of these embarrassing moments created by Reverend Moon, who's this sort of monster in the laboratory of conservatism that they like to keep out of sight because he embarrasses them so much. And this was an anniversary party for the Times where Senator Orrin Hatch was there making sort of a speech about capitalism and why liberals want to tax the rich too much and so on and so forth, and George H.W. Bush shows up and delivers a video message, and then Reverend Moon takes the stage and gives this bizarre 45-minute speech where he starts talking about, I think I can say this on the air, the sexual organs, why are they shaped this way? He says absolute sex is centered on God and free sex is centered on Satan, and everybody in the audience looks a little bit uncomfortable because they make such a big deal of being editorially independent. And one of the new things that's happening, Sam, is that with the change in ownership, in editorship at the Washington Times now, they're trying to spin it as a mainstreaming of the Washington Times, that it's no longer going to be a weirdo far-right newspaper. But the thing is, it continues to be a Reverend Moon instrument of prestige and access. And it will continue to be something that the Reverend Moon, this guy who everybody expected to be deported from the United States years ago, that he can use around the world to say, look, I'm the guy that publishes the conservative newspaper. And in fact, Reverend Moon has gained access to places like North Korea even, bragging.
All right, John, I'm sorry, we're out of time, sure. But people should check out your site, truefather.com. Pick up your book, Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. John Gorenfeld, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Check that video. I can't wait to see that. Cedar and for Hartman, 48 after, 866-303-2270.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
For full show podcasts with no commercial interruption, join Air America Premium. Visit airamerica.com and click on Premium to join now.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom is en route, has landed in Darfur. He'll be doing a show live from there on Friday. This should raise your spirits a bit. Carl Rove was apparently speaking at the University of Iowa Sunday. He was paid $40,000 to speak at the university. He was confronted with an at times hostile crowd of 1,000 people and was interrupted on several occasions. Police were forced to remove two people after they tried to perform a citizen's arrest on Rove for what they said were his crimes while a member of the Bush administration. There's still a good chance that Karl Rove is going to have to deal with some of this at one point. Whether it, and I think it may have something to do with the Department of Justice. At the end of the day, his meddling in this Don Spiegelman case could very well be the thing that sends Karl Rove to jail. At one point, a person asked Rove if he ever shed a tear over the war in Iraq. He said, quote, I shed a lot of tears. And I've been inspired by many of the people who feel their son or daughter should not have to die in vain. What a very strange answer.
I'm glad he was well compensated for that experience, because it sounds really unpleasant.
Well, but, you know, he's saying here, who feel their son or daughter should not have to die in vain. Now, what does that mean? Is he suggesting that if they leave, they would have died in vain, or if they went there in the first place, they would have died in vain? Toward the end of the speech, a member of the crowd yelled, "Can we have our 40 grand back?" Rove replied, "No, you cannot." Let's go to line 7, Dave in Los Angeles. We just got about a minute, Dave. Welcome to the program.
Don't go looking for emotions in a sociopath. I mean, that's like looking for water in the desert with Karl Rove. I'm Elliot Spitzer. Look, it was not a political hit job. The political portion of it was just icing on the cake. This was taken down because of the markets. He was going after the second biggest cause of the subprime and coming up the muni bond crisis. He was going after the ratings agencies. He had to be shut down. That's all it was. The political part of it probably made the decision a little quicker, expedited things, and got it through a little faster. But that's why he was taken out.
The motivation. So you're suggesting that it may have been a hit job insofar as we have a corruption of the Department of Justice doing the bidding of some of the biggest players on Wall Street.
The biggest players on Wall Street, and I'll go so far as to say the economy as a whole. This thing is a disaster, and these ratings agencies are right behind it, meaning S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. That's who he was going after, and he needed to be shut down.
Well, Dave, you know, you may be right on that. I mean, I'm going to be talking to Scott Horton later in the next hour, and I want to also know, what was Michael Mukasey's role in this? You know, Mukasey, when you talk about, Dave, when you talk about finances, Mukasey was well entrenched in the Republican GOP circles in New York. And so one has to ask, you know, where was Mukasey in all this? Now, I don't know. As I read this New York Times thing, it appears as if this inquiry was kicked up a notch under Gonzalez, or at least the acting attorney general. And Scott Horton may have a better sense of this. But, Dave, I appreciate your weighing in. You know, clearly there is something really wrong about this. This is not to be an apologist for Spitzer. What he did was obviously wrong as well. But the question is, do we have a Department of Justice that is targeting people based on their political affiliation or what they're trying to do in office? Cedar and for Hartman will be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? Program. Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. Tom Hartman.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom is en route to Darfur. He'll be broadcasting live from Darfur on Friday. Number's 866-303-2270. We're talking about the Elliot Spitzer thing, of course. And Scott Horton will be with us later in the hour because, frankly, this whole thing reeks. Regardless of whether or not Elliot Spitzer did, in fact, break the law, whether he was he is guilty of a misdemeanor, which we don't even know, or a felony for that matter, the question remains, why was the Department of Justice involved in this? Why was the Department of Justice wiretapping him? Very strange. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, good news. Mass transit use hits a 50-year high. Bad news, it's because gas prices are soaring. Today very well may be a record high for gas prices. Reuters reports the U.S. average gasoline prices should hit an all-time peak on Tuesday. Congratulations, folks! Oh, that's not it. Sorry about that. Let's try it this way.
Wow.
There you go! May break $4 a gallon in some areas this summer, battering consumers already reeling from high energy costs. Of course, you know that. Of course, you know that George Bush criticized the Clinton administration. You guys have let gas prices go up almost by 20 cents. It's hard on Americans. Now let me show you how to do it. I'm going to raise it $2.40. That's uniquely American. Monday's surge in crude to a near $108 a barrel should be enough to lift gasoline prices, averaging 3.22 a gallon, now above the record current 3.227, I guess. This is coming from a AAA. And, of course, folks, based on that job report on Friday, every reason to believe that we are in a recession now. And, in fact, of course, let's give thanks where thanks are due, or number 15.
We'd like to thank you, Herbert Hoover, for really showing us the way.
I'm going to do a dance now. Watch me tap dance. Hit the music again, maestro.
We'd like to thank you, Herbert
Hoover,
for really showing us the way.
Ain't goodbye me. I'm getting out of office in 9 months. I'm just going down to my place in Paraguay, wherever the heck it is. Somewhere Araguay, some Uruguay, somewhere down, like Mexico. And go down there, my ranch, spend all that money I made on Texas Rangers. Because we charged tax to build the stadium and sold the Texas Rangers. See you do that. It's uniquely American. Meanwhile, John McCain on Friday said that finally reversed his happy talk on the economy and said it's very likely that America is in recession. And then on Sunday, when he's being interviewed on 60 Minutes, he said, more or less the opposite. This is number three.
Everywhere we went in Texas with you, it was about the war and foreign policy. And I wondered in those town hall meetings if you had an understanding of how concerned people are about the economy, about whether they can keep their homes, about whether they can keep their jobs.
Look, these are tough times. These are very tough times.
How would you characterize the mortgage mess?
I think it's a disaster. But let me hasten to add, Scott, I think the fundamentals of our economy are still strong.
What do you do for the person who just saw gasoline go from 3.25 to 3.50 on its way to $4?
I would love to tell you that I have an immediate answer for that. And I don't. The only way we're going to fix it is to eliminate our dependence on foreign oil. We've got to have a crash program, an all-out effort, but I can't give you straight talk and tell you that tomorrow I can change the price of a gallon of gas.
So there you have it. John McCain saying the fundamentals are strong. What possible fundamental in our economy right now is strong? We're losing jobs. We have a record number of unemployed. We have a record number of negative savings. Wages have lost ground relative to inflation since 1999. Consumer confidence at an all-time low. Foreclosures, record foreclosures. Short of the fact that, my friends, we're Washington. Fundamentals are good. Now, where do you think this moron, and listen, it's wrong for me to call him a moron. He's a moron when it comes to the economy. He has admitted as much himself. Where do you think he got this line, our fundamentals are strong? Could it be from March 3rd, 08, when George Bush said, our fundamentals are strong? Or could it be back in February when he said the fundamentals of the American economy are still strong? Or every time George Bush has talked about the U.S. economy and the only thing he can say is the fundamentals are strong? I can't give you an answer right now, but I will make one up. My friends, we need to wave a magic wand and then everything will be okay. Let's go to line five, Alan in Brattleboro, Vermont. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Hi, I love your program this morning. First of all, the fundamentals not only are not strong in this country, they're not strong in the world. We've reached basically a checkmate with the commodities of this planet. We can't get them out fast enough to meet the demand. To couple that, you got Mother Nature pounding on the mines. We've got issues. But back to the Spitzer case. The gentleman that called it was right on the mark. I've been obsessing over the Business Channel for quite a while, and I've been watching Cuomo and these guys be like the only people in the world who can challenge the powers that be, and they're asking for regulation up at the top around these huge bond insurers, and it ties into, like you said, Moody's and Fitch, Standard & Poor's. I don't understand the entire aspect of it. I just was waiting for somebody to rattle on Cuomo's door, and it makes perfect sense to me that they just get somebody from his team. They're pretty sneaky that way. Let me get to the point.
Yeah.
Nobody can understand what goes on in this world until you understand the banking that goes on in this world. And if people want a crash course in that, there was a program that was originally aired on PBS in 1995. It was called The Money Masters. You don't have to buy it. You just go to Google. You punch in The Money Masters. You can go to the video or just punch it in regular. The regular website will give you the option. It's a 3-hour program. It tells you all about the Federal Reserve, how it's not a federal company. In the end, don't miss the last half hour. You're going to cry during this, and you're going to get the creeps because he talks about the future, and this is 1995. He talks about what we're going through right here. But don't miss the last half hour because there's a simple way to solve these problems that people aren't aware of, like Monetary Reform Act is really where we all need to go. And we're all yelling about this and yelling about that. But I've found more often than not, for example, did you know that Hugo Chavez started his own World Bank? Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Well, it's called Banco del Sur. And this is why, I mean, like, everybody knows about Hugo this and Hugo that. And I ask everybody, even some of the best politically minded people, do you know that he started his own World Bank? And they don't know that. So this is the banking is, I think, where everybody needs to brush up on. And you can brush up on it in 3 hours. You can have the whole system described to you. Bring tissues, but don't miss the half hour.
All right, Alan.
Okay?
All right. Yeah, well, look it up. The Money Masters. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Christopher in New York, line 6. Welcome to the program, Christopher.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say I've been following the Spitzer, how people are reacting to the Spitzer case on Huffington Post and Daily Kos and that kind of thing. And I think we really need to take a stance that separates us from the Republicans and say, you know what, this was wrong. He needs to be penalized for it. He needs to resign because they're already using it against us and saying, you know what, you really don't have the principles you talk about. You're just as partisan as we are. And if all we focus on is, well, you know, what happened to Vitter? What happened to Craig? Or why is he being penalized? We really look like we're hacks just like they are.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I got to tell you, I think that it's more than likely that he has to resign. But with that said, the issue is, I mean, to me, is, I mean, because I think it just makes him politically dysfunctional. I mean, he can't, I just don't see how he can go on and do his job. And, you know, I do think, you know, I think there is some question as to whether or not when someone commits any type of misdemeanor, let's say, that does not have anything to do with his official role, that you get into a gray area. Like, I don't know if, I don't know that Larry Craig should have resigned or that David Vitter should have resigned. I think they hung on because they made a political calculation that they could. I don't think that, that Spitzer will be able to. Do I think he's hypocritical? Yes. If he's found, to have actually engaged in this behavior, absolutely. But then, you know, to me, it moves on to the question, and I appreciate the phone call. It moves on to the question of what is the Department of Justice doing wiretapping prostitutes based upon their understanding that Spitzer might be involved with them? I mean, it sounds to me like they were looking and spying, essentially, on Elliot Spitzer, and trying to figure out how they could nail this guy. So whether Spitzer stays or goes, this Department of Justice is still an issue. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. It's 22 past the hour. Coming up in the next segment, Scott Horton, attorney specializing in human rights and international law. He is an expert on the Don Spiegelman case. Don Siegelman case, former governor of Alabama, who's been set up by this corrupt Department of Justice, and he's going to be, we're going to be talking about the Spitzer thing. But let's take a couple of your calls. Line 5, BJ in Los Angeles, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Sam. Thanks. I love hearing you on Air America all the time. I think you might be a little bit wrong about how he came to be under investigation in this case. My understanding is that it came, what happened was that there were large money transfers, which are generally reported to the government, and that they tripped off an investigation. They thought it might be bribes, and they ended up with this.
Now, BJ, all right, now let's listen to what you just said.
Right.
Now, money transfers, bribes, right? That would mean money coming to Spitzer.
No, not necessarily. I mean,
you think Spitzer was bribing someone else?
No. The issue is when large sums of money are transferred, what can be going on is laundering of money.
Yes, no, I understand that, BJ.
So money can come in, and you can odd financial transactions.
But money was not coming in. Money was going out.
Right, the cash money can come in, and then money can go out and be transferred.
But
when
they would have seen
But
see, here's the point, though, BJ.
Right.
The so-called transfers of his money were under $10,000, and it set off an alarm that this guy was trying to avoid the threshold for when banks automatically report to the IRS. But there was no money coming into him. He was taking the money out. And
absolutely.
They would have seen, if they thought it was a bribe, they would have seen, okay, they would have seen a commensurate amount of money coming back in. But let's assume that's why they were watching him. Then what did they do?
They began an investigation. They found out where the money transfers were going, and there was another crime at issue that was actually a money laundering scheme. Now, I don't know what
he wasn't transferring this money. He was giving it to the people. Are you there?
Yes, hello?
Well, he's giving this money. My point is that according to the New York Times.
Right.
The way that they found out what outfit that Spitzer was supposedly, allegedly using was with the quote, this is from the New York Times, with the assistance of a confidential informant, a young woman who had worked previously as a prostitute for the Emperor's VIP Club, the escort service that Mr. Spitzer was believed to be using. So they had no sense that he was using this, A. B, where did this former prostitute from the Emperor's Club show up?
There's a lot of...
All right, we're losing you, BJ. I appreciate the call. I mean, there's a lot of questions here. There's a lot of questions here. Charles in San Leandro, California. Welcome to the program. Line 9.
San Leandro, actually.
San Leandro,
My comment was about Sun Myung Moon and the Great Tuna Fishing Fleet. If people are interested in sushi bars and such, they ought to check out the Sun Myung Moon tuna fishing industry. He is probably the major economic force in the little town that I live in. I think he owns at least 15 corporations here, including 2 sushi places.
Well, I do know that he had up in Gloucester, Mass, because I had friends who used to live there. He used to have a large presence in Gloucester, Mass. He's obviously involved in fishing. And, you know, listen, Charles, when you are king of America, like apparently the Reverend Sun Myung Moon is, I would think that you're going to want a fleet of fishing vessels to act as your sort of like de facto navy in some respects.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Well, yeah, this Sun Myung Moon, the amazing story about this, and John Gornfeld has it all in his book, is that this guy was coronated King of America in a Senate office by 2 congressmen and a senator. Just absolutely bizarre. I appreciate the call, Charles. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Scott Horton. If there's something fishy going on here, Scott Horton will be able to tell us about it. He is... an expert on this Don Siegelman case. He has been following the corruption of the Department of Justice for a year or two now. And we will be speaking to him in just moments. Cedar and for Hartman, it's 27 after.
This is
the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom is en route to Darfur. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when this Elliot Spitzer story broke, one of the first things I did was immediately go to No Comment at Harper's Magazine, the online blog at Harper's, written by Scott Horton. He's an attorney specializing in human rights and international law, and is, my estimation, one of the experts, or maybe the expert, on the Don Siegelman case, which is an outgrowth of this corruption of Department of Justice, this using the chief law enforcement agency of the United States as a weapon to punish political opponents of the Republican Party. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Hey, great to be with you.
Now, Scott, take me through this. Now, I don't want to get into... let's stipulate for the moment that Elliot Spitzer has engaged in this. We don't know for sure, but let's assume that he has. Let's stipulate that it's a misdemeanor, but if he is in violation of the Mann Act, which apparently is rarely used at all anymore, if that is the case that he violated that, it wasn't shown that he violated that until February 13th, which is only 3 weeks ago. Walk me through what rings, what sends up a red flag for you in the way this investigation has gone about.
Well, I think we got to start by saying that there are few things that have given the tabloids more fun in New York in a year. I mean, we're hearing all about the Love Gov, and I think Jon Stewart scored real points last night talking about no cinnamon, no spice. So I think there's loads of lurid detail here. And I think we also got to note right up front that Elliot Spitzer came before the cameras and didn't deny anything. In fact, he was acknowledging grave mistakes and so forth. So we got to look at these things in two different bins. And one bin is the question of, did this guy do something wrong? And I think the answer, looking pretty overwhelmingly now, yes, he did.
Right.
But we got a whole nother area in which to look, and that is, was Elliot Spitzer targeted? Did they go after him trying to find some flaw, crack, some problem in his background to take him down? And there we see a lot of things going on right now which are very disturbing. There's a lot of evidence coming out that suggests this wasn't the investigation of a crime. It was the investigation of a person. The first story that came out from the New York Times talks about an investigation looking at a prostitution ring and talks about this mysterious client number 9, who we're told is Elliot Spitzer, who gets caught up in it. But last night, we got a lot more detail coming through in a report from ABC News. New York Times has now confirmed it. And that says that, no, it started with an investigation of Elliot Spitzer. And through the investigation of Elliot Spitzer, they discovered the existence of the prostitution ring. So whenever a criminal investigation is going after a person and not a crime, there's reason to be very concerned.
All right. So now the latest story, like you mentioned, started with this investigation of Elliot Spitzer, which was supposedly triggered by his withdrawal of a series of withdrawals from his bank account of money that didn't necessarily reach the threshold where banks are automatically responsible for informing the IRS, but appeared to be a pattern of someone who was trying to avoid that threshold. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. It's a bank out in Long Island that got in touch, we're told, with the IRS and Hawpog, saying, you know, we see this system of payments being made, and to us they look very, very suspicious. Now, of course, one thing we've got to note is that Elliot Spitzer made a lot of enemies amongst very powerful figures, and that's especially the insurance and the banking communities in Manhattan. A lot of people there want to take him down. And in fact, there was a report that there was applause that broke out on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange when his misfortunes were announced yesterday.
So, all right. So now, when do we have a notion of when that first investigation was triggered at the IRS?
Well, we know it goes back certainly into the fall of last year, and exactly how far back we don't yet know. And we're told that they suspected that this was an effort to cover bribery payments. And I got to say, well, that takes quite an imagination to come up with that. And then to have the IRS launch a full-fledged investigation targeting Spitzer, the IRS has got a terrible record right now of launching audits and inquiries that are politically motivated and politically targeted. They're even going after Barack Obama's church in Chicago right now, and a whole series of other cases where they've gone after churches and religious institutions whenever the minister gave a speech that condemned the war or spoke critically of President Bush. So the IRS right now is pretty deep into the political mire itself. And we know the IRS then began to involve the public integrity section. The public integrity section is the part of the Department of Justice that deals with allegations of crimes involving elected officials and a few others, judges and so forth. And of course, the public integrity section under President Bush has opened 5.8 cases against Democrats for every one against a Republican. And the likelihood of that happening as a result of just random chance is 1 in 10,000. So we see that that section has been involved in a series of political hits. It has been sort of the center within the Justice Department of politically motivated prosecution.
All right,
it led the case here.
All right, we're talking to Scott Horton. He writes the blog No Comment for Harper's Magazine. He's a New York attorney specializing in human rights and international law, and has also been one of the premier writers on the Don Siegelman case. Now, so we have this situation where the Public Integrity Unit is brought in because they suspect bribery. Now, I don't quite understand how they suspect bribery, because it appears to me that money's flowing out of Spitzer's account, not coming in.
That's exactly right.
He's not the one who's getting paid by the prostitute, right?
That's right. And the sums involved here are, you know, 4,000, 5,000. In fact, we're told that there was a $4,300 payment made for one tryst because he had a credit of $700.
And this is a guy who is, by all accounts, a multimillionaire.
An extremely wealthy figure. So this was, you know, not an extraordinary sum of money for him. It's trivial. So I'd say the initial account of what raised eyebrows, you know, frankly, that account raises lots of eyebrows. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't hang together. It looks like an attempt to cover an effort to go after Elliot Spitzer. And remember, Elliot Spitzer was promising to lead a charge for a resurgent Democratic Party in New York that was aiming to take control of the state legislature. You know, the Republicans have held the Senate forever. And the Republicans had been sending out SOSs for a long time down to Washington to help us get rid of this guy. And I think, you know, one construction we can put on this as that the message got heard loud and clear and help came through.
Well, and this also just happened to be timed with a contribution by Michael Bloomberg to the leading Republican in the state, Bruno, of $500,000. Maybe just a coincidence. But be that as it may, so let's keep following this track here. So according to the New York Times, before long, the investigators learned that the money was being moved to pay for sex. In other words, he was paying out. So it wasn't bribes. He was paying out money that was being used to pay for sex. And the transactions were being manipulated to conceal Spitzer's connection to the payments for meetings with prostitutes. Then, the New York Times writes, with the assistance of a confidential informant, a woman who had previously worked as a prostitute for the Emperor's Club, this is the agency that sent the girl, the escort service that Spitzer was believed using, the investigators were able to get a judge to approve wiretaps on the cell phones of some of those suspected in the involvement of the escort service. Now, my question is, where does this informant materialize from? I mean, they're looking at this, right? They're seeing, okay, it's not a bribery case. He seems to be sending money into this escort service. All of a sudden now, a former worker of this VIP outfit calls up the FBI or the Department of Justice and says, hey, incidentally, If you ever happen to do an investigation of the prostitution place I worked for, let me know because I'm out here.
Well, that's right. And in fact, we got to remember again, it starts with an investigation of Spitzer, not of this prostitution ring or of these prostitutes or call girls. They're going after Spitzer, and it's through that that they come to this informant.
And so, okay, then they get the wiretaps, and we can't tell exactly when this was approved. But if we know that it was between the fall of last year and today, doesn't that begin to involve Michael Mukasey?
Well, I think this work is being done out of the Southern District of New York, and Michael Garcia is the U.S. attorney in charge who's been leading this investigative effort. And Michael Mukasey, of course, had been the chief judge of the Southern District, meaning that, you know, he had a professional relationship with Garcia. But, you know, I think there's no question but that that this is going on and this is being developed while Mukasey is the attorney general. And I think there's no question. We know also that Garcia sent a memorandum trying to get authority to go after a senior elected official. We know that that happened late last year, and certainly Mukasey would have known about that. I mean, that wouldn't go forward without him knowing about it.
All right, we're talking to Scott Horton here. And here's my other question, Scott. How do investigators know, without having a wiretap, how do they figure out that this money is heading to the prostitutes? I mean, is Elliot Spitzer really basically sending a check to these people? I mean, I don't understand how that happens.
Yeah, most likely wire transfers, but, you know, we got a lot of details we need to develop on the case first.
And then it goes on in this New York Times story. So obviously they get a wiretap. They get something like, I don't know, 6,000 emails and record conversation after conversation after conversation. But apparently they're hanging their hat on this February 13th call is basically when they decided to wrap this thing up, because now they have something that implicates specifically Elliot Spitzer, and they have a phone recording of people referring to this client 9.
Well, I think we have to contrast this directly with the D.C. Madam case involving Senator David Vitter, because in that case, his name comes up at some late point, but the Department of Justice is working feverishly to put a cap on any mention of Vitter or Vitter's involvement in the case. In this case, and of course, he's a Republican senator from Louisiana. Now, in this case, talking about the Democratic governor from New York, we see a radically different style in handling it, where he's laid out there for the press right away, very aggressively, in fact.
I want to argue that it may be even beyond the notion of a radically different style. According to this New York Times, the affidavit does not name the governor, nor does it name any of the other 10 men described as having purchased sex through the operation. Instead, it refers to them by number, with Mr. Spitzer, according to two law enforcement officials, listed as client 9. Now, you would know this better than I would, but are two law enforcement officials supposed to be leaking this information on an ongoing investigation?
Well, absolutely not, but they absolutely did. No doubt about it. And there have been no repercussions for them having leaked it either.
It's pretty astonishing. And this, of course, you know, they had more than 5,000 telephone calls. So it seems to me that they had plenty of opportunity to bust this prostitution ring, but they were waiting for one special call.
Well, I think that's right. And you look at what they did. I mean, we see the text set out from this call, and it's filled with lurid and salacious detail, which winds up being on the front page of the New York Times very, very quickly. And so it seems to me very, very clear that's being worked in here as a death knell for a political career. It's to destroy a political figure and be sure he's never going to run for office again.
And so what do you think, Spitzer, at this point, what do you think that he's going to do? I know this is total speculation on your part, but what do you think he's going to do?
Well, I think he really doesn't have any option. I think he has to resign. I mean, I'll tell you, as a citizen, as a New York citizen, I'm horrified at the idea that somebody's going to sit in the governor's mansion and negotiate a plea bargain with the prosecutor using the office of governor of the state as a chip. That's absurd.
Right.
He really has to resign.
Yeah, I agree with you. But the issue as to how this case developed continues on. Scott Horton, I appreciate your joining us today. You can check out his blog at No Comment, entitled No Comment at harpers.com. Scott, thanks for joining us. Number's 866-303-2270. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. It is now 49 after the hour. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. 54 past the hour. Let's go to line three. Gina in Salinas, California. Welcome to the program, Gina.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
On Spitzer.
Yeah.
He's a pro, we know, at making big busts. I think, and the only thing that the American people really gets their attention is these sex scandals. Okay,
that's true.
But I think that he would be aware of that. And I think he's trying to bust the Department of Justice for illegal wiretapping of big Democrats.
I don't know, Gina. I mean,
Just watch. If we look at it from that angle, we'll be able to see if there's any moves in that direction. He's no dummy, and he knew he was a target.
I mean, I'll tell you, Gina, I would love to believe what you're saying. I mean, I got to think that his plate was pretty full just being governor of New York State. Rather than try and run some type of, sting operation.
No, if he knew that they were after him, hey, kind of like Bill Clinton, some little girl show up that was probably paid no telling how much money, okay, and that would trigger him to think, well, hey, something's going on in this direction because that's their mode of operation.
I mean, maybe, Gina. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call. I mean, That goes a little further than I'm, that it's a little bit hard for me to believe that this is all just a setup by Spitzer. It is shocking that he didn't realize that they would be after him in some respect. I mean, it is really shocking. Carl in Chicago, Illinois, line 5. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Hey, Sam. Just calling. I just wanted to express, I don't know if you've actually said it explicitly, but, putting some of the, actual details aside, just how disheartening all this stuff is, with the U.S. attorney scandal, the U.S. attorney's purge, the state prosecution, how people really, it's all this debate. It's kind of like the 2000 election. People just can't have faith in, some of the things the government's doing for us anymore.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, listen, what has happened is the Republicans took control of this government, and they have systematically tried to tear it down. Look, what have Republicans been running on for, I don't know, since as long as I've been alive? It has basically been government is evil, government is bad. So they take controls of it, and they just, it's basically, I would like to say it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think this is basically their agenda.
Well, people who don't believe that government can do it or can't do good are not capable of doing good with government.
Absolutely, Carl. I mean, I would even take it further. People who hate government are going to come in, and they're going to abuse it for their own means, and we're seeing that right now.
Real quick, though. I mean, the other issue is Spitzer going to use this stuff as one of his possible defenses, the purge, or potentially, looking at from another aspect, the other story in the news, could he go with the water made me do it?
Could he what?
Did the water make him do it? All the drugs in the water.
Well, I don't know about that. I appreciate the call. Look, this is what happens when your government begins to get so corrupt. Anything becomes possible for people. I don't know if he can use this as a defense, but for the rest of us, it should be an issue that we have a corrupt DOJ. We'll be right back. Cedar in for Hartman.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. The Tom Hartman Program. Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We are back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman today. Tom is en route to Darfur. He may actually be calling in a minute or two, right, Lauren?
That's right.
I'm going to tell him I busted up his car. That's the thing. When you when you sub for somebody, you get, it's not just you. You take over their show. You get to get all their stuff too for the day. And I got Hartman's car. I was on the houseboat, and I accidentally untethered it from the docks, and it's out in the middle of the Pacific right now. He'll be bummed. Folks, the FISA fight continues. The New York Times had a report today that the House is now, if you remember, let me just catch you up here. The Senate passed a version of the FISA bill, the update to the FISA bill that included immunity for telecommunications corporations that spied on you illegally, or who knows, swept up sitting Democratic governors in some type of net. Be that as it may. The New York Times today reported that, in fact, the House has now come up with another proposal that does not include immunity for telecommunications companies. Now, the New York Times story seemed to suggest that what the House bill does call for is for federal courts, not the FISA court. All right, do we have them now? All right. We will get back to this in a moment, because on the line we have Ellen Ratner of Talk News America and maybe Tom Hartman. Where are you now, Ellen?
Well, for our security reasons, we're not going to tell you where we are, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to put Tom on to talk a little bit about the trip, and then I'm going to give you some Washington news. So here is the host of the show, the top to the host, Sam Cedar.
Oh, great. Tom Hartman, ladies and gentlemen, en route. We're
hey,
in
Sam.
Darfur. How are you, Tom?
Hey, Sam. I'm great. I just 2 hours ago, my son and I got off a plane, and in 10 hours we're getting on another plane, and we're en route. But we've been advised not to publicize our where and when and all that kind of stuff. So. But in any case, we're on our way. And how's everything going there?
Everything's going good, Tom. I didn't want to tell you this, but I crashed your car.
Yeah, okay.
So, Tom, tell us, you're going to be broadcasting live from Darfur on Friday. Is that right?
Hopefully, yeah. The satellite phone, God's willing, yeah.
And so tell me about the trip that you're making. Why are you doing it, and what are you hoping to find out?
Well, there have been a number of people who've gone over there recently, and you know, Steven Spielberg and Mia Farrow actually have brought a lot of light to this. MiaFarrow.org is a great website. If you go in the upper right-hand corner and click on photos, you can see a lot of good information about where we're going. And she was on the show last week. We're going with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Talkers Magazine is helping sponsor this. A couple of other talk shows, Rusty Humphreys, the conservative, and Joe Madison, the African-American the talk show host, has been on our show, and known as the Black Eagle, and a few others. And I'm this is, you know, I did relief work in Africa in the early 80s, in 80 and 81 in Uganda during the war with Idi Amin. And so I'm very interested to go back into that part of the world and see what's going on. I'll have a whole lot more to say next week. Right now, we're not there yet. So.
And I know you've been told not to talk about where you are or what your point of entry is going to be, et cetera, but what specifically are the dangers that you guys could face while you're over there?
Well, Nick Kristof was writing about this last week, and we had him on the show last week. In fact, he was talking about they're starting to bomb the aid stations now, and try to drive people out, presumably to not have witnesses, and which is one of the reasons that we're trying to be. I realize you and I are talking to 3 million people right now. We're trying to be a little discreet about it. We'll see how it shakes out. The good news is that China is the big player in this area because they buy most of the oil out of the Sudan. And 2 days ago or 3 days ago, the Chinese appointed a special representative to Sudan, which Darfur is part of southern Sudan. And it's like a region, you know, it's like Texas is part of the United States kind of thing. And actually, it's an area about the size of Texas, and or Sudan is. And they appointed a guy to specifically go in and try and ramp down the violence and stop the Janjaweed and calm things down because they've been getting such bad press, and they want to have good press going into the Olympics. And I think, you know, China by and large wants to be perceived in the world stage as a good actor. So I see that as actually very good news. It's apparently going to be about a week or so before their guy gets there. But that's a good start.
What's
happening in the U.S.?
Well, I don't know if you've heard about Elliot Spitzer.
Actually I have.
Aside from the issue as to whether or not he is guilty of anything, aside from the issue as to whether or not he should step down, there are some real questions. And I was just talking to a guy who I know is on your program fairly regularly, Scott Horton. And there are some real questions as to how this investigation evolved. And it clearly appears that they were investigating a person as opposed to a crime in this situation.
Yeah, well, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, he busted a real high-end prostitution ring. And I was, you know, when I saw this news, I thought, oh, gee, I wonder if they just turned the tables and entrapped him the same way that Sam Carlos Marcello and Santos Tropicati down in Florida were blackmailing J. Edgar Hoover for years and years, you know. Except that instead of blackmailing, they just nailed him. Who knows? I don't know.
I have a feeling people will still be talking about it when you get back. And so I can tell you your listeners are very excited to hear your reports, and you're much missed here.
Well, thank you, Sam. Thank you. And I want to thank you so much for filling in for me today and Laura tomorrow and the next day and on. You know, we really appreciate all the help, all the support of Air America.
Oh, it's our pleasure. All right, so let's get Ellen on there and find out what's going on in D.C., even though she's in some mystery place.
Great. Here's Ellen. Okay. Ellen Radner with the news from Washington, D.C.
Okay, well, there's actually a ton going on today, Sam. And first of all, there's a budget resolution that is happening. It's interesting because they're going to be dealing with that in the House tomorrow and the next day. The Senate is working on, and they want an extra $35 billion for additional stimulus. It's not in the House plan. The House is thinking of extending unemployment. And so that's sort of top of the hit parade. Now, the president also gave a speech today to the religious broadcasters, and he has basically said that he wants to really focus on the fact that the Iranians are dangerous, that the world is a dangerous place. This is the first of several speeches he's going to give before General Petraeus testifies before Congress.
So this is the ramp-up, John McCain is great for America speech.
That's exactly right. And also, something that may not have hit the newswires yet, but some senior Bush administration officials have refused invitations to testify before the House Armed Services Committee, and this would have to do with the signing statements that Bush has issued. And they have asked members from the Defense Department, the Justice Department, to come testify. As you know, the President has issued about 157 signing statements dealing with 1,000 provisions in the law.
So this is the Senate Armed Services Committee. So theoretically, we could see this from a bunch of different Senate committees that are responsible for laws that have been essentially broken in some respect by these signing statements.
Exactly. But, you know, no Bushies are getting there. We are going to hear and have been hearing, actually, during the day today, some testimony from the GAO and the Congressional Research Service, but that's about it in terms of that front. Also, today, the Kennedy and Stabenow and several other senators had a little presser. They talked about what they consider their priorities for the budget: green collar jobs, education, job training, infrastructure and tax relief for working families. Of course, that is not for the Republicans. Republicans are too busy working on New York and trying to figure out how they're going to get the governor to resign or impeach him, which is, of course, some of what they're focusing on. And also the problem with the budget resolution is that Senator Byrd is in the hospital, and they're going to try and get all the three senators back. Well, the Democrats want Hillary Clinton and Obama back on Thursday to vote, and, of course, the Republicans want McCain to vote on the budget resolution. If Hillary Clinton and Obama don't come back, they don't have enough votes to get that budget resolution passed in the Senate.
So they better get off the campaign trail and do some work, in other words.
Absolutely. They got to get them off the campaign trail at least for a few minutes. There is a lot of question about immunity and federal courts and what is happening with all kinds of a House bill on this issue, whether there is going to be immunity in terms of the telecoms,
yep,
particularly around how are they going to possibly hear evidence. The House is thinking of putting forth a bill, House Democrats, that would essentially give immunity not give the telecoms immunity, but have evidence decided by a federal court who would be empowered to hear secret evidence.
Yeah,
so, and to be empowered to hear evidence that would be classified. That's going to be a very interesting fight.
Yeah, this I was just talking about this when you guys called in. This is very interesting, and my understanding is that the plaintiffs would be happy with a bill like this because it basically would allow a federal judge, not a FISA court judge, simply a federal judge, to look at the material, deem which is that which should belong as a state secret and that which should not, and then allow for the trial to go forward.
Absolutely. You said it much better than I have. So, well, what do you know? I'm in the middle of God knows where at this point. But in any case, I will tell you that would be a plus. The question is whether the Senate Democrats will go along and whether it'll be filibustered, which my guess is it will be.
Right. Well, I guess time will tell with that conference. Well, Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service reporting from somewhere between here and the other part of the world.
We will be calling you in soon. Thanks, Sam.
All right. Good luck. Stay safe, Ellen. Ellen, of course, is joining Tom Hartman and some other radio talk show hosts as they head to Darfur. And hopefully Tom Hartman will be broadcasting live from there on Friday. Number is 866-303-2270. We'll take your calls on the other end. Cedar in for Hartman, 19 after.
Helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, folks, 24 past the hour. Went a little late with Ellen Ratner and Tom Hartman en route to Darfur. As I was saying, this FISA bill is working its way through the House. The version that they're proposing sounds pretty good from the perspective of people who want to know if the American government has been spying illegally on us with the helps of corporations that we pay money to. So we pay them twice to spy on us, essentially. You get this, Ciro? See how it works?
Yeah, I got it.
You pay money to the phone company so you can use the phones, use the Internet. Then you pay taxes to the government, who then pays money to the phone companies to spy on you illegally.
So who gets all that money? The surcharge? You ever see that ad?
No. Surcharge?
You ever seen that before? whatever.
Oh, here we go, buddy.
It's late in the day.
Oh, that took a long time to
fall. Well, that was a big bomb. I mean, what do you want from me?
This FISA bill, so what can you do about it, folks? You head over to places like FireDogLake.com, sign a petition. You can call Congress, go to congress.org, get the name of your congressperson, call them up, tell them no telecommunications immunity. If they broke the law, they should have to suffer the consequences in civil court. And more importantly, what you want is discovery. That is the process, that is the prelude to any lawsuit of these companies for violating the privacy of their clients. Within the context of that discovery, they will be deposing different officials from these telecommunications corporations and finding out who approached them, under what authority, to do what and when. And that's what we want to know about. Let's go to the phones. Ellen in Brooklyn, New York, line 5. Just got about a minute, Ellen.
Thank you very much. Most ebullient. The point of one concern is that this governor of New York, Spitzer, was about to try to clean up some of the messes that Pataki had left, you know, and the coalition with Joe Bruno and
yep.
Sheldon Silver.
Yep.
It's like a triumvirate. The three of them, in fact, Bruno had equal power practically as the governor. It's very, very powerful, you know.
Well, the timing of this is really suspicious, Ellen, because Michael Bloomberg had contributed $500,000 to Joe Bruno's political action campaign, I think it is.
Yes.
There was also a special election in New York's, I think it was, 26th district. I'm not exactly off the top of my head. I can't remember. But essentially, the majority of the Republicans in the state Senate is down to one. They're about to lose it. It'll basically take the GOP out of play in New York state politics, but this changes all of that. Some people suggest it also was some way just a payback for John McCain being exposed for being an actual prostitute himself, at least a prostitute to lobbying firms. We got to take a break. Cedar and for Hartman, be right back.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Folks, if there's one thing I can tell you today with complete assurance that I know that I am right, that when you are on the Sammy Cam, which you can link to at samcedarshow.com, never start a Mac versus PC argument. Because all you will get is people arguing about Macs versus PCs. Almost like the primaries that we're seeing in the Democratic Party. Mississippi will be voting today. Of course, the Clinton people will not recognize it as actually taking place, or will say that it doesn't matter because... Well, I don't know. Pick your choice as to why they say this state won't matter. It's because, I suspect it's because Clinton won't win. But the real question is, by how much will Obama win? And he is building up. He's adding to his delegate lead. Even last week when he supposedly had a bad week, there's probably, a net gain of his pledged delegates and superdelegates. As of Ohio, Rhode Island, Vermont, Texas, and Wyoming, he was down by 4 in that week in and of itself. He's still up by over 150. Obama picked up 3 more superdelegates, and then 4 if you include Bill Foster, who's elected to the House now. And I think he also picked up some in the California certification. The delegate count was certified in California, and it appears that he picked up another 8 delegates. Here's John McCain on 60 Minutes last night. And just to give you a sense of John McCain is, there's really nothing that I could argue that would recommend him to the office of the presidency. I mean, here is a man who touts his foreign policy experience. Here is a man who was Ahmed Shalabi's, one of his greatest sponsors. In fact, one of John McCain's top campaign advisors, I don't want to say former lobbyist, because I think he's probably just on sabbatical from his lobbying job, Charlie Black, serves as McCain's chief political advisor. He is also, I guess maybe he's not on sabbatical. Oh, wait, right. This is the guy who actually makes lobbying calls from the back of the Straight Talk Express. Is that right, Lauren? He's got like a mini office set up in the back there.
Mm-hmm.
This is why when I say John McCain is a prostitute, I don't mean that he actually gets money to perform sexual acts. What I mean is that he has sold his soul to the lobby industry. I'm not the first person to say this. Apparently George Bush said it back in 2000. Apparently Haley Barbour, George Bush surrogate, said it back in 2000. I'm not the one that got him embroiled in this savings and loan scandal. I'm not the one that hired all the lobbyists to run my campaign. I'm not even running for anything. So when I say that John McCain is a prostitute for lobbyists, I am not saying that he provides them with sexual favors. I'm saying he provides them with legislative favors for money and support that either rolls into his campaign or whatever it is.
Which one do you think is worse, Sam?
You know, it probably depends on who you're dealing with, but frankly, I got to be honest with you, Lauren. I don't care what two consensual adults do, whether they pay for sex or not. I mean, it's legal in this country, apparently, to pay two people for sex, videotape it, and then sell it via your shell company if you're someone like Disney. They call it pornography. So I don't understand why it's illegal for one person to pay another person sex if everybody's consensual. If that industry was regulated, you wouldn't have the abuses that go on. Whereas in the case of John McCain, whereas he gets all this funding and advice, apparently, from lobbyists, and then turns around and does them legislative favors, generally that means cash out of my pocket, or it means a diminishment of my ownership of the common good, of the common property. Whether it's oil companies taking, getting cheap, reduced royalties on oil they take from my land and your land in the form of it being federal government land, or whether it's him harassing the FCC to leave open loopholes so there can be more media concentration. So frankly, if you want to ask me from a moral standpoint, what I think is worse, being a prostitute for these lobbyists or being a prostitute providing sex for people for money, I think I got to go with the former. But the issue with John McCain, of course, is that the media is completely in love with this guy. They never report. And to his credit, John McCain does admit and has admitted on many occasions he's called himself a war criminal for his work in Vietnam, bombing children. He has admitted to, and it's on public record, that he, under torture, criticized and denounced the United States of America, which, again, I do not blame him for. What I blame him for is the fact that when a bill came up just 3 weeks ago in the Senate to outlaw waterboarding, which he considers torture, to outlaw its use by the CIA, and frankly, I think it's already illegal, he voted against it. But will the media tell you that? I don't know. Let's ask Scott Pelley from CBS 60 Minutes. Scott, when you talk about this issue, maybe you should just check and see what the latest vote John McCain took or made in regards to torture when you ask this question. This is a little tip from somebody who's not a journalist to someone who's supposedly on one of the chief investigative programs on television. This is number one.
Is waterboarding torture?
Sure.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
So the United States has been torturing POWs.
Yes. Scott, we prosecuted Japanese war criminals after World War II, and one of the charges brought against them for which they were convicted was that they waterboarded Americans.
How did we lose our way?
I don't know the answer to that. I think one of the failures maybe was not to listen more to our military leadership, including people like General Colin Powell on this issue.
Now, two things strike me. One is, why did not Scott Pelley follow up? Well, then, sir, if you believe waterboarding is torture, why did you vote against the legislation that came up in front of you three weeks ago, that said the CIA must operate under the Army's field manual, which says waterboarding is torture? Why did you vote against that? But instead, Scott Pelley asks, how did we lose our way?
We, meaning America.
Yeah, we, America.
All of us.
All of us. How did we all lose our way? John McCain can't answer that question. I can answer that question. Because you, Scott Pelley, do not do your homework and actually hold these people who have allowed torture to take place and have allowed it to take place in the future to the fire. You do not hold them to account for the votes that they make. You let them come on and have a puff piece where you fluff this guy for however long that 60 Minutes piece is and let him get away with this and have people walk away and go, he's a stand-up guy. He doesn't believe in torture. And what they don't know is he voted to allow the CIA to torture. Unbelievable. Let's go to John in Detroit, Michigan, line 8. Welcome to the program, John.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I guess I'm a little bit annoyed because I see a guy like Scott Pelley loaded down with cash for his job on 60 Minutes, and he can't even be bothered to read the most recent vote on torture. So maybe I'm feeling a little bit annoyed.
Well, you know, torture hurts people, and there's a victim in torture. The thing is, in regard to the Spitzergate matter, there's no victim. We're essentially investigating and prosecuting a religious code. And we might as well prosecute adultery or prosecute believing in a God other than the God of Abraham. It's a little ridiculous that our tax dollars are being spent to prosecute what consenting adults do behind closed doors.
John, I got to agree with you there. It's very suspicious to me that a federal investigative body was spending this much money pursuing this. 5,000 phone calls, 6,000 emails, wiretaps, et cetera, a four-month investigation to indict four people on prostitution. Now, the only problem is, John, and where I think that, you know, to a certain extent, Spitzer is very susceptible, and not as he's being very incredible hypocritical, because if there was one person in New York State who could have influenced whether or not these laws stay on the book, it would have been Elliot Spitzer.
No doubt. He's a hypocrite. He's stupid. He should have known better. But the fact remains that we're enforcing a religious code in this.
You're absolutely right, John.
Couldn't look a little ridiculous.
Couldn't agree more. I appreciate the phone call. You know, because the terrorists are out there to get us. The terrorists. We got to be monitoring all your phone calls and your emails so that if Osama bin Laden is sending you a YouTube, sending you his favorite YouTube, we got to know about it. If he's calling you on the phone, if you're doing a, you know, one of them, get your cat off my fence. Phone pranks. We want to know about it. Yet, at the same time, we're spending all of this time, who knows how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars spent on these federal wiretaps for a prostitution ring of four people. Line 1, Flo in Sunrise, Florida. Welcome to the program, Flo.
Hi, good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Flo.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I saw that piece on 60 Minutes, and it just made me sick because I knew what his latest vote was on torture, John McCain's.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable that they don't even raise that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And another thing that's unbelievable, today the feds came up with $200 billion to rescue these banks. Not the people that need it, but these banks. And I want to tell you where I'm living. Four new banks sprung up over the summer. In less than a mile radius.
Wow.
And it's so disgusting what's going on. But I tried to get on a show last week about these flight schools. They're taking 8,000 people in, and they don't have background checks. They don't have the proper visas. And it was on Worldwide News with Charlie Gibson.
Huh.
And that was last week. So where's the security there?
Flo, I mean, it's all just simply a joke. I mean, I appreciate the phone call, and you know, the Joe Lieberman has been asleep at the wheel and oversight of this Homeland Security stuff, and you know, they'll trump it up to scare the hell out of you, but when it comes to actually doing something about providing security in this country, I don't think we're seeing a lot of it. And of course, the free marketers who bemoan the fact that you could actually bail out any of the people who borrow money. But you got no problem with bailing out the lenders. Let's go to Nancy in Portland, Oregon, line 2. Welcome to the program, Nancy.
Sam, welcome to Portland. I agree with you, Sam, that something doesn't smell right in the Spitzer issue. The fact that his activities were tracked through wiretapping sets off alarm bells. The Republican Party has used unauthorized wiretapping in the past.
Uh-huh.
Kennedy. and they're trying really hard to make it legal. I suspect that there are plenty of Republicans who are guilty of similar transactions and transgressions to Spitzer's, but somehow they have not been tracked through wire trafficking.
Well, I'll tell you, Nancy, I appreciate the phone call. The bottom line is, like Scott Horton said, they were investigating the person, not a crime. So you can be sure the Department of Justice, the crony-run Republican-controlled Department of Justice, isn't choosing to investigate Republicans, tracking them down, seeing what they can find. They only do that for Democrats. We've got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman, 47 after.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a couple minutes here, 52 past the hour. Sam Cedar in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be hopefully back Friday, or at least via sat phone, as they call it, from Darfur. Line 8, Louis out of Manhattan. Welcome to the program, Louis.
Hi, Sam. I think you're on fire today. See if I frame this right for what you're saying. It's a form of intellectual prostitution, because once you sell your integrity, you actually sell the core. You become a puppet. In fact, there was a novel written called The Fisherman's Wife, where it makes an analogy to a glove. Once you keep trying to reshape it and shape it, you lose the shape of it. You just can't sell your integrity and get it back.
I think that's the perfect explanation of John McCain, because I think somewhere in his being, he knows what is right, but he has never been able to pursue that with any type of consistency. You know, I admired him in 2000 for saying that Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson were agents of intolerance, but then this guy goes and kisses his ring because of his own ambition after these people have said that 9/11 happened because of the ACLU and lesbians and feminists. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. John McCain has tried to reshape that glove that is his humanity, his intellect, his integrity, and he can't find it anymore.
Yeah, I think you lose it in a very subtle way. They know how to take it away from you in very subtle patterns, because if it was abrupt, you would realize that you're selling out. But if it's done very subtly, by the time you realize you don't have it, you don't even know what it is anymore.
Louis, I couldn't have said it better. I appreciate the call. And I think John McCain is just blinded by his just pure, raw ambition. You remember this guy approached John Kerry in 2004, please let me be your VP. He approached multiple people in the Democratic Party in 2001. I'll switch sides, swing the Senate to your side. Whoops, Jim Jeffords beat me. I can't be the fulcrum. I guess I'm happy in the Republican Party. Is it Abraham in Staten Island, Line 7? Welcome to the program, Abraham.
Honored to be on. Listen, I want to make a couple of points, but first I want to point to another caller I heard one time. He just got on there and said, listen, this guy, Sam Cedar, he is sharp, he's witty, he's funny, he's fun to listen to and hang out with. We need this guy to share his content with us 5 to 7 days a week, and that's definitely a broad-minded position that many of us are holding.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know if I could do 7 days a week, buddy, but I appreciate it.
Randy has it because she has repeats of her show in the middle of the night. Yeah.
All right, so quick, we only got a minute or so left.
I want a little bit more than that, but timing is everything. And thank you for emphasizing sequence, because the sequence of how the information was processed and a rapid, tidal wave. Now, the way the media market is now, if you chuck something in there with a fancy name next to it, the media environment will gobble it up, and you have every unit of information magnified way beyond Walter Cronkite, multiplied by Barbara Walters, multiplied by Oprah, on steroids, in an echo chamber, on an never-ending loop. So just by the sequence of events are very insensitive. And because I think of his fate, I think that played a role that he was that was his Achilles heel, discreetly. Because I don't think a person who was Catholic would have been addressed that way. But definitely the sequence is very detrimental in this fashion, because he is an expert lawyer. He can at least argue the matter with judges behind closed doors for, you know, adequately to at least let it be into court before he is, you know, exposed to this entire tidal wave. I just want to give you a quick analogy. The way that he interprets this outcome, it's sort of like if he went to a doctor's office and the doctor immediately recognizes cancer, and immediately he just brings him to the operating table and starts gutting him out before he even notifies his wife, before he even reschedules something at work, before he even has second confirmation. He's immediately ushered into the surgery without even notifying his wife. And if he lives through it, he'll call his wife and tell him, hey, I just got the surgery.
All right, Abraham, I got to let you go, but I hear what you're saying here. The media has basically already finished this entire story up with Spitzer. And we really don't know the details. They have gotten incredibly murky. All right, folks, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, C-Ro. Thank you, Lauren. Tomorrow, filling in, Laura Flanders. Check out samcedarshow.com for more information. Mark Maron and I do our vidcast every day right after this show. Talk to you later, folks.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.